From Tampa Bay, USA, this is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
Take no big thing to wait. gonna need to score. Showing up, showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't she be? Love is the drug.
You beautiful humans, this is Glenn Klein Online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, July 4th, 2012, the only Independence Day for the United States of America, 2-0-12 in the history, well, of America and the world. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, on this special celebration of liberty, of this special celebration of freedom. We are going to be talking about the implications of liberty, of freedom, the role that the American Revolution has played in all this. That is my firm conviction that it was founded and inspired on the truth of the gospel that resides in every human heart. We're going to be talking about the gospel revolution vis-a-vis freedom and liberty as we continue right here on the good news on Glenn Klein Online. That is the dynamic opening theme from the HBO film John Adams that so well documents and portrays the American Revolution. We're going to be having some of the clips from John Adams because it just, if there's any question in any of you beautiful humans' minds as to whether the United States was founded on Christianity or not, I hope at the end of the evening you will be convinced that that is not the case. But the reality is, in your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host's humble opinion, is that this good news, this gospel, is resident in every single human heart. And every so often, there is a burst of freedom that comes out of the human heart that is manifest on the planet. We saw it in an amazing way as we celebrate the anniversary of that today on July 4th, 2012. I have to have my mathematician, Sean O'Halloran, who is also the producer, engineer, and call screener extraordinaire, figure out what is this anniversary? 230, what would it be? 1776. 2012 minus 1776. Bring up your little computer calculator. First of all, say hello to the beautiful humans.
Hello.
Bring it, baby. Come on. You got more than that in you. Sean's back is bothering him, so we're not going to take any calls tonight. Now, the reason we're not going to take any calls is because this is actually recorded. If all goes as planned, I'm actually in Southern California visiting my son Jacob in the greater San Diego area, Oceanside to be exact. So we did this ahead of time. What the heck was that?
That was the calculator on the computer.
Oh, and the total is? Do we need a drum roll?
Not coming out right.
Not coming out right. That's what she said.
There we go. 236.
That's what I thought. 236 years. This is the 236th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. We're going to be talking about how the gospel resident in the hearts of those revolutionaries impacted the history of the world, frankly, and how it was not Christianity that inspired them, but it was a yearning for freedom and for liberty. We've got some incredible clips from the John Adams HBO docufilm. And if you guys haven't seen that, I don't know this to be a fact, but I would not be surprised at all if HBO is not running that series over the July 4th holiday. Plus, if you just get the DVDs, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I cannot tell you how this seven-part miniseries, if you will, has inspired me, and how much Michael and I shared in our love for this period of history, not to mention this particular series that was done so brilliantly by HBO. And I want to talk a little bit about how we analogized and compared the gospel revolution to the American Revolution and why we think that's so important. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as part of our discussion, we want to introduce the initial segment of Chris Harrington's Reality. Please welcome online from the great city of Nacogdoches, Texas, the Chris Harrington of Chris Harrington's Reality. Chris!
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, and so can the beautiful humans all over the world. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Not a problem.
Chris and I have known each other for quite a while, actually, for many years now.
Really?
But much more intimately recently, as I've gone through about seven different crises in my life. And Chris has been kind and gracious enough to kind of walk me through some of those things. And Chris, thank you so much for everything that you've done for me and for so many people around the planet. Why don't you give the beautiful humans a little bit of an idea about what your background is, how you came into the understanding of the redemption of all, and what you're doing with your life right now?
I'm an online mediator. I was a high school and junior high school public school teacher for 33 years, and I retired this last year. And so now I do online mediation, working with individuals and families and couples, and helping them resolve issues that they have by helping them create sort of a contract that they can use to communicate with. And that's what I'm up to.
Well, and you do it so amazingly and so brilliantly. Michael often said to me that, I mean, obviously Mike's been around the ministry for the better part of 40 years. And he has said that as far as counseling is concerned, I don't even know if you call yourself, you said that you're a mediator.
Uh-huh.
But he mentioned counseling specifically and just the general concept of helping people and being there for people and being able to kind of direct and suggest and massage people into basically their own answers, right, Chris? I mean, that's basically
sure,
what you do.
Absolutely. I think my forte is trying hard to remain absolutely neutral, which means that I have to discard my own thoughts, my own dogmas, my own preconceptions about things. And I'm asking other people to do that same thing. So that I think that's the heart of my work.
Well, what I was going to say was that Mike has often said you are the most amazing at that thing that you do. And he's seen so many people do it. And I've seen some tremendous results personally and know a lot of other people who've been helped. How did being a high school and a public school teacher all those years prepare you for this?
Well, I think the major thing was that, over the years, the landscape of the kids that came through public school increased, during the 50s and 60s. when computers came online, they brought everybody out of the woods, and people around the planet started moving. So what you might have seen as your fundamental client or the student coming through the public school system, it changed dramatically in the last 30 years. So I was there at that moment when it started to change. And so in order to keep up, I had to allow that whatever predisposition of that student was, whatever they came with, whatever their background was, whatever their religion was, whatever their whatever nomenclature that they used, whatever thing that they were addicted to, that was the thing that I was going to use to reach them. And so I had to drop all of my dogma and my preconceptions and just say, hey, whoever you are, perfectly fine with me. Let's deal with that.
Dramatically and drastically just became one word, ladies and gentlemen. Dramatically,
that's right.
I like that.
Why not? Shakespeare did it all the time, right? I do it in my poetry all the time.
You do, don't you? Why don't you tell the beautiful humans about your poetry?
Let's see. I've been writing since I was 5 years old. My grandmother was deaf, and she had me writing to her. She never learned sign language. She went deaf in her 30s. And so I wrote from an early age, and it just seemed like the way to communicate. And then started poetry pretty serious when I was 12, and have now over 500 notebooks. And online, I'm looking at, I think I calculated the other day, somewhere around 3 million words online that I've put out in the last 5 years.
You're kind of like the Wilt Chamberlain of the internet, I think.
I don't know if I want to go for that.
Well, go
for it, whatever.
Three million words is prolific,
yeah.
Brah.
Online.
Yeah, of course. Wilt Chamberlain said that before he passed away, he said he had been with 20,000 unique women.
Yeah, barely handled the. Well, I can't really handle the one woman I've got right now. The thing is that. That's the part of it I don't think I could keep up with.
I think somebody figured out that
too amazing to figure a landscape like that.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, think about it. I think somebody figured out that he'd have to be with 3.5 women, unique women, every single day.
Yeah,
for
a day. I saw an interview with him, and he said sometimes 5 or 6 women a day.
Yeah, well, it would have to be.
Yeah.
Well,
on the other side, the way I figure it is that I have I often will say I'm an MBFF, a male best female friend. That is, I have this ability to kind of fit into the female landscape in that way and be best friends with a lot of women. So they'll call me their girlfriend or their BFF.
Why is that, Chris?
Happens a lot.
Why?
Because they want to be able to talk to a guy without there being any kind of sexual overtones, or to be able to talk about sex absolutely directly and get an answer without it being something that's manipulative. And so that's a place I often go, because sometimes people's self-concept or their self-esteem is wrapped up in how they see themselves sexually.
Why is that? That is an accurate statement. Why is that?
It has a lot to do with rejection and also your sense of your mortality. Like, say, for guys, you know, when your body's shutting down, there comes a point where you may become impotent. So then what do you do with that? You know, so working through people's rationale and understanding themselves and accepting where they are in their stages of life. It's a constant, you know... It's a constant breakdown. The human body breaks down over time, and it's the same way for every system in the body. So you have to allow that that's true, and you just work through it, and you morph yourself, you transform yourself.
This is Glenn Klein Online. This is The Good News, and this is Chris Harrington. Chris Harrington's reality here on The Good News on Glenn Klein Online. We want to talk about the gospel. We want to talk about the good news, the good information, which is that we are all perfect, ladies and gentlemen. We are all righteous. We are literally one. God and you and me and Chris and Sean and everybody within the sound of our voices, which is everybody because we're on the World Wide Web, are one with God, each other, and themselves through the sacrifice of the Mashiach, of the Messiah, of Yeshua, 2,000 years ago in Jerusalem. That was the day of independence. That was Independence Day from the guilt and condemnation and judgment from Almighty God. And we talked, Chris, just a moment ago about why sexuality is so tied into our sense of well-being. How fair do you think it would be to say that because our ability to procreate is so akin to the creative power of God that it kind of goes back to Adam's misconception in the Garden of Eden, that he could somehow get to be more like God when he was literally created in the image of God. Now, we on this side of the sacrifice, on this side of the cross, we are literally one with God. And yet we want to find our identity in our ability to procreate and our ability to create, or our ability to be like God when we are already are one with God.
I think it's limiting to think of it just purely in terms of like biological procreation. You know, we want to extend nations, we want to build companies, we want to, you know, build teams and families and products. Well, there are all different ways for people to create. Only, you know, 30% of the people in the United States that are married can't even have kids. I don't have any children. So, you know, there are many different ways that we can procreate besides biologically creating our own children.
Right, but subconsciously, at least, subconsciously, maybe consciously, the sexual identity, as you said, that a lot of people find their sense of well-being and their sexuality, whether people do or can procreate, a lot of people don't want to procreate, and yet they still want to create. And so people find their sense of well-being and their ability to create or
That's
to expand
right.
themselves, if you will.
Yeah.
And if they are stunted in their opportunities or their ability to do that, a lot of times they get frustrated because their true identity should be in themselves or in Christ, if you will. And so they find frustration in that. And what you were suggesting before is that you help lead people out of that frustration because you are not in a manipulative sexual state with these women especially.
Yeah, in fact, I think all of that information it's well beyond whether or not we're willfully engaging in some process. I think it gets down to the past the biological, which may be just a metaphor for it, but I think the way that things are, the physical landscape of the universe cosmologically, I think you could say probably that the way that things are constructed, that it creates this undulation of creation and recreation constantly. You know, in science, they're constantly talking about that, the Big Bang or the Big Bounce or whatever it is. There's always some theory about how things are constantly generating.
And the concept, of course, is that the universe is constantly contracting and extracting at the same time, correct?
Sure, absolutely.
It's kind of like sex, if you will.
Yeah, you could say that it's one giant orgasm if you wanted to.
Well, not necessarily an orgasm, but
it's limiting because that's so human-centered, you know.
So the concept of the give and take of sexuality, of intercourse, that you say it's human-centric. I might say that was inspired by the Almighty, that concept. And we see it even in the universe.
You could, but see, for me, all right, when I'm dealing with people, like I'm Buddhist, so I see things from a particular slant too, but when I'm dealing with people, every human being has his or her own belief system, and for me to enter into a contract with them that they have to agree to my vocabulary already puts them at a disadvantage for being able to move forward, because first they're going to have to adopt my entire system of thinking.
Right.
So rather than that, what I would like to do is just to say, however you think is perfectly fine with me, let me adopt that system, and let's just make sure that you're continuous, that you're making sense to yourself, that your dogma, your doctrine is backed up by how you act, how you present yourself, how you express yourself. And so that's mainly where I go. I wouldn't pressure someone to adopt a certain variety of thought. It'd be too limiting for them. I don't want to tear them up. It's like ripping a turtle out of its shell. I'm not into doing that.
Right. All right. So this is awesome. This is Chris Harrington, you guys. This is Chris Harrington's reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online. So we're on a mass communication platform right now. When you are talking with people, as you do in your mediation, one-to-one, a couple at a time, a family at a time, an individual at a time, I can understand taking that perspective and that approach. Sure. But when you're approaching in a mass communication way on a worldwide listen to radio show, how do you adopt that philosophy to a mass communication effort?
Okay, an example of that, okay, is about the concept, say, of good and evil or good and bad. I think a lot of people are they're concerned about moral issues, and yet they themselves will have conflicts within their own moral values. And so I asked them if we could dispense with that momentarily and maybe use another vocabulary. Instead of saying good or bad, for example, I might use the concept of good. If it's good right now, what if it's not so good tomorrow? Was it bad today and I just didn't know it yet? So instead of going through all this analysis that includes my having this thing that I'm going to do be good and always have a good trajectory throughout all of eternal history going forward, instead of that, what if I just ask whether it's effective in the moment? I get rid of the morals altogether. Is this an effective way to communicate? Is this an effective way to treat people? Is this an effective way to draw customers?
And you
get rid of morals that way.
Right. And so what you're saying is that is applicable whether you're communicating in a mass communication way or one-to-one. All right.
So I don't want to judge people, so I want to make it effective or ineffective or maybe efficient or non-efficient.
All right. So having said that,
sure.
This is what I do, you guys. I dovetail everything back into what I want to talk about.
I love that.
So I started the program saying we're going to talk about the American Revolution. We're going to talk about the Gospel Revolution.
Sure.
We're going to talk about the evolution of what happened with me and Michael. And Chris is very intimate. And, you know, you guys, now you know Chris Harrington's reality a little for a second. You had a little appetizer there. Right. So that you were talking about a man who just told you that he's got 3 million words online. You had a little bit of foretaste, a little appetizer, an hors d'oeuvre, if you will. But Chris, you get down to the bare bones. I mean, you deal with people where they're at. So you've dealt with me. I think you may have actually spoken with Michael since this all went down as well, right?
I know a lot about a lot of people.
Okay. So he's not going to either confirm nor deny that, which is, I like that. But you guys that have been listening to the show, you guys that listen to the Gospel Revolution webcast, you guys that have been reading both Michael's emails and my emails know what I've been dealing with, at least, because I've been very upfront about my frustrations, about my honoring of Mike, about how I feel about how he did what he did. And so here's what happens, Chris, is that in my desire to share the truth of the gospel with people and my belief that Michael Williams is the greatest teacher of the gospel that has ever walked the face of the earth, that's my personal viewpoint.
Okay.
We've wanted to continue to have kind of a best of Mike Williams segment on almost the 7 years of webcasts that we did.
Sure.
And I was actually looking for a different quote, but a different part of another webcast. But on this July 4th, I heard this aspect of freedom. We were doing a Gospel Revolution email extravaganza, and
right,
people were criticizing us for the language we were using and the freedom that we were articulating. And I asked Michael about it, and we're going to hear Mike's comments. You're going to hear my question, and then I want to get your comments about it as we continue right here on the Good News on Glenn Klein Online. This is the Best of Mike Williams theme, Kate Benham from Down Under.
I believe the world is won. I am not a Christian. I believe the battle's won. I am not, and I believe the kingdom's come. I am not a Christian. One light lit up everyone. I am not a Christian. Yeah. Well,
yes, we're not Christians, ladies and gentlemen, although Chris just identifying himself as a Buddhist. I'm not a Buddhist either.
Buddhism's not actually a religion at all. It's more like psychology or calculus or something like that. It's a thought form.
Yeah, I used to be a gospel revolutionary until I got excommunicated. But now I'm just this now I'm this Jewish guy in Tampa.
I don't think you could be a non-human being and still be human.
Exactly. All right. So here's what. So we're reading emails, and as was my want on the Gospel Revolution webcast, when we got a criticism, when we got a complaint, I wanted, and we did, deal with it directly.
Uh-huh.
As, of course, no ministries do it that way, and most radio shows don't do it that way. I mean, if somebody had a complaint, we dealt with it directly. I wish Michael would have dealt with his complaint with me directly. I still haven't talked to the guy in over almost a month now. It's over a month of the airing of this show. But just to give you an idea of where Mike was at just a few months ago on the whole issue of the radio show vis-a-vis freedom, as we continue to talk about freedom on this July 4th, check out this clip.
Okay.
In the same vein, we got this letter from California. It says, guys, do we really need to use language on the webcast that I'm sure many would find offensive? And he puts in parentheses, hell, damn it, etc., frickin'. I've been around this language my entire working life and even used to it. I've used it often myself. It has a distracting effect on we who are listening. We don't think it's necessary or proper for the broadcast.
Well, I do understand that it is distracting for some, and the thing that we're trying to do, you wouldn't believe how many we've eliminated.
Exactly.
Yeah. First, give us credit for the ones we've eliminated, and believe me, if you go back through some of the old broadcasts, you will find that a tremendous amount have been eliminated, and even in those, there was much that was eliminated, even in light of those webcasts. I think at some point you have to come to what is just generally accepted by the general population. And I just kind of rely on the film industry as to what daytime TV would allow, and hell and damn it and things like that. They are a part of my daily vocabulary. There are other things that can be a part of my daily vocabulary which I choose to omit. I'm not going to pretend to you that I don't use a little bit more colorful language whenever I'm not in a broadcast or something like that.
Colorful language, you call it. Colorful
yeah,
language.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
It's colorful, but I never use it in the presence of someone that I think might be offended by it. But we are on a 180-country webcast, and I suppose we could start whittling away every single term that offended somebody, but we'd wind up not saying anything. The ones that we do use, the ones that I feel comfortable in my heart with, are the ones that we do use. And I think that's what everybody has to do. You just have to do what you feel is comfortable in your own heart. We're not Howard Stern, and we certainly could be on some level, and and we're not Pat Robertson either, and thank God on both counts for that.
he says some pretty profane things from time to time. Pat Robertson does.
Well, I think he's more profane than Howard Stern. Actually.
Yeah, no, by far. I mean, without question. However, I have to say this. That as many people that might be offended by our use of the word damn or hell or damn it or whatever, we've had at least an equal number of people comment that they appreciate the sense of freedom that we have here. And frankly, we want to convey the level of freedom, even just what Michael just said. Having something nice to say, maybe even nicer to say about Howard Stern than Pat Robertson.
Everybody's saying that the lights don't shine, but the lights shine down on me. Got a new friend, and my new friend's name is Jesus. Met him in the parking lot, he took me in his car. I got a new friend, and my new friend's name is Jesus. Sold me his guitar. I got a new friend, and my new friend's name is Jesus. Now people give me sideways looks when we set up on the strand. It's hard to suck with Jesus in your band.
This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online. That was the best of Mike Williams segment. And, yeah, I'm obviously you guys struggling with this whole thing, especially in light of what you just heard Michael say a few months before he fired my ass for basically doing exactly what he said to do or what he recommended do, which is follow your heart, which I did on the radio show in a public platform on Facebook Live with Dina Lynn. You guys that are, have followed this radio show so far and have followed the saga know exactly what I'm talking about. We've got Chris Harrington's reality on the line from Nacogdoches, Texas. Chris Harrington, very familiar with all the players in sure. this situation. All right, my friend. So you just heard that. What am I to make of all that?
Well, first off, making a play to create a platform to use Mike to show that he's working against his own best interest by allowing freedom and then not allowing freedom in a specific case is a very interesting use of information, okay? So that being said, and I appreciate
Interesting use. That's an interesting use of language right there. What do you really want to say, Chris?
Well, it reminds me of Ann Coulter, all right?
Right.
Here's what happens. Someone comes on and says something about Fox News, and Ann Coulter says, you know, and they're trying to put Fox News in a negative light.
Right.
And so what happens is Ann Coulter says, I appreciate your pointing out that Fox News is a resource. So I could say equally here, I appreciate you're using Mike as a resource, and therefore he's still a source that we can all use.
Okay.
But see, that would be me reversing the platform, and so I would have to be taking sides. Make sense?
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. So the dialectic you're creating is, it seems like it's appropriate then to use Mike's words against himself, because he has been a person who said this was something good to do, and it was, and you were set up for it, and then you did it, and then it didn't work out for you.
Right.
Make sense?
Right.
And I appreciate that argument, and that might be true. From your point of view, that's how you see it, and that's how it rolls. But there are, according to physics, multiple universes that are occurring simultaneously. And so, without having all of the data on the table all at the same time, and without our having the ability to objectively at that data, without having any feelings connected to it, it's really difficult for us to ferret that stuff out. So what we could do is we could parse that out one bit at a time, and if you got objective about it, maybe the entire thing could be rolled over into, isn't it fantastic that the two of you now have two different platforms from which to reach the general audiences that you both are so good at reaching?
All right, well, here is my comment on that.
Sure.
Yes, it is fantastic that there's two platforms.
So the problem is the emotional issue.
No, that's not the problem. The problem is that neither platforms are as effective as the initial platform was. And now I'm going to tie this in.
How do you know that to
the American Revolution? Because all you need to do is listen to the Vacacta thing that they've come up with Barris Bartlett, with Michael just doing his thing, which
right.
I'm not saying it's not good, or listen
right.
to this thing, which I think I do a good radio show. You're an unbelievable guest already. Sean does his thing, and I have good callers, but there's a special dynamic. With
I feel like Byron Katie already. I'm like going after the subject, you know, no, wham.
Nobody knows who Byron Katie is, bro. Don't worry about it.
She's cool. You should go see her in The Work online.
Yeah, nobody knows who Byron Katie is or Ann Coulter, but that's okay. Well, listen, for time's sake, we will just continue on.
Okay.
Now, here, but you guys do know who Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin are.
Sure.
And you know who Abbott and Costello are. And
right.
you know who Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon were.
But do you see what you're doing is you're creating these linked visions of how you see things need to continue and that there's a breakdown. But you forget that Jerry Lewis then did the telethon
for
40 years.
Bro, I am not saying that good things did not come from breakups. Let me tell you something. this thing that we're going to examine here momentarily, the American Revolution, we have John Adams, the second president of the United States, and Thomas Jefferson, the third president of these states united, being incredibly linked up at the time of the Revolution, then becoming unbelievable political enemies. Best of friends become enemies, and then at the end of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson's lives, they come back together, and let me say this.
Yeah.
They both die 50 years after the Declaration of Independence is signed, which we are celebrating today on July 4th. This is the anniversary of not only the independence of the United States of America from Great Britain, but also the anniversary of the simultaneous deaths of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson.
That's right.
These guys reconcile at the end of their lives. That they lived to like they were in their 90s, and they had time to reconcile and write letters back and forth to each other, and those letters are so precious. And the experience, Chris, of these guys, these two guys reconciling after having been political enemies.
Right.
It's kind of like what we saw with Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford, or what we see with George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton. These guys were political enemies, and they end up becoming very good friends. Mike and I were the best of friends. And
I don't know that you guys are enemies now.
No, we're not. We're not enemies. We're not enemies. I'm just pissed off at him to like no end. And he told me that he was so now we haven't talked, but this is through email.
Yeah.
That he was so angry with me because I forced him to do what he did.
Well, I find it interesting that the battleground is personal, but the subject matter, right, that was covered during those 7 years was something that belongs to everyone. And so it seems to me that it's a groundwork, all right, that is the show and your friendship and all that. It's a groundwork that is minimalized in the face of the structure that's in front of us. That is, the gospel itself seems to be the driving force behind even the friendship, and yet it seems to be on the back burner when it seems to me that that should be on the front burner, and that that's the subject matter, and that instead of reviewing this other stuff and going on with that, that we could be compelled then to find health and balance in staying with the gospel.
Right. That's why I'm able to talk with somewhat of a sense of humor with this.
Yeah.
And honor him. And
absolutely.
And you guys, I've said this so many frickin' times. Well, I just use the word frickin'. Sorry to our friend in California, whoever the hell that guy was. But whatever.
Well, you know, this is the same thing, though, about when people would denigrate traditional or fundamentalist or evangelical Christianity either on the show or on the Facebook page or on other pages or in conversation or on the tapes or on the CDs. The reality is that's offensive to some people. And
people have suggested that Michael should never mention the fact that he's a homosexual because that might dissuade people from the gospel.
Sure. I hear that.
I cannot hear that.
That is a problem for some people, but also, it could be a problem that you have Jewish background, right?
I'm a Jewish boy.
Yeah, and so am I. All right, I have Jewish background also.
Yeah, but
the Mediterranean crossed North Africa into the Azores, and then finally into San Francisco, and that's where my family landed.
Dude, but do you like kosher corned beef? That's all I want to know.
Not so much.
No, then you're not Jewish. Sorry.
Corned beef, not so good.
Corned beef, not. You don't like the salted meats?
I don't like the smell.
I love the smell of corned beef. you know what it smells like?
No, really? Really?
Do you know what it smells like? I'll tell you what it smells like.
You're going to wreck my smell button. Is that what's going to happen here? Over radio, you're going to wreck my smell button?
It smells like victory. What movie is that from? Apocalypse Now.
Rocky. What is it?
Apocalypse Now with
Oh, is that right?
Right, with Robert.
It's amazing though.
Not Robert De Niro. Robert. Robert Duvall is on the beach. He's on the beach of Vietnam, and they're napalming everything. And he says, "You smell that? It's I love the smell of victory.
Of napalm in the morning.
Of napalm, yeah, it smells like victory. All right, well, I hope you guys are having fun. We got enough time to get into the tie-in between the Gospel Revolution and the American Revolution. And when I told Chris that I wanted to talk about the John Adams film from HBO, fortunately, Chris, you are familiar with it because you showed your kids in it. And what a great thing to show your kids.
It.
You what? What did you just say?
I said, I think I have seen it. I saw it shown in the classroom next door to mine. I dropped by while they were playing it.
Oh, you didn't show it for your kids. Another teacher did.
Yeah, we showed it at school.
Oh, so you didn't show it personally. Somebody else showed it.
No, I didn't show it personally. I had the language arts class, but the history teacher next door didn't show it.
Oh, okay. Good for the history teacher.
Yeah.
All right, so here's Mike. And by the way, this is also Mike's strong conviction, is that resident in every single human being, as I like to call them, the beautiful humans, is been imputed by God, by his choosing, by the Almighty, by the sovereign work of God at the cross, wisdom, sanctification, redemption, and righteousness. All in the same way that God chose to impute sin, the sin of Adam, to the entire human race before the sacrifice in Jerusalem by Yeshua. After that, God flipped a switch, and everybody is born righteous, everybody is born redeemed, everybody is born sanctified and wise. And every so often, whether it be in the American Revolution or the women's rights movement or the civil rights movement or the abolition movement or the gay rights movement, every so often this unity, this wisdom comes forth and produces a moment that changes life for everybody on the planet forever. Would you say
the Klein-Williams Revolution?
Yes, I'll say the Williams-Klein Revolution. See how what I do? I defer to my teacher and mentor and friend.
Yeah, I see this as a revolution too. Maybe he's Britain and you're America, and you're splitting off and you're doing your own thing.
Well, it is very akin to what happened with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, and I'm saying he's Thomas Jefferson in this, and I'm John Adams. But nonetheless, because I'm the short guy and he's the tall guy, tall, good-looking guy. All right, so
but he gets the credit for writing the Constitution.
No doubt, or the at least the Declaration of Independence. Although he spoke it, book one that's about to come out. I edited it, and we're going to get to an editing portion in this clip of the John Adams with John Adams and Benjamin Franklin. It's awesome. But this first clip, just to show you what was in these guys' hearts. And John Adams was at the forefront of this movement. He was from Boston. That's where everything went down, the Boston Massacre. That's how the whole thing started. And he's speaking before the First Continental Congress. He's speaking to people in Massachusetts. This is a brief clip, but these are all historically accurate speeches and moments in history because they were recorded, and we have them, kind of like the scriptures, if you will. But not to draw the same analogy to the scriptures. We'll get into that on a later webcast, perhaps.
Go for it.
But here is John Adams with Paul Giamatti. He won, I think, the Emmy Award for this, for his portrayal of John Adams for HBO, talking about where liberty come from. And hear the passion in his voice and the words of John Adams, who would eventually become the second president of the United States of America.
Let it be known that British liberties are not the grants of princes or parliaments. That many of our rights are inherent and essential, agreed on as maxims and established as preliminaries even before Parliament existed. We have a right to them, derived from our Maker. Our forefathers have earned and bought liberty for us at the expense of their ease, their estates, their pleasures, and their blood. Liberty is not built on the doctrine that a few nobles have a right to inherit the earth. No! No! It stands on this principle that the meanest and lowest of the people are, by the unalterable, indefeasible laws of God and nature, as well entitled to the benefit of the air to breathe, light to see, food to eat, and clothes to wear as the nobles or the king. that is liberty. And liberty will reign in America.
All right. Liberty will reign in America. This is before the first Continental Congress, before these guys got together, Chris, the first time.
Sure.
I mean, how thrilling it is to hear. There was no religion mentioned there. There was only the concept that people had a right to this kind of freedom that was derived from their maker, and they all had it, regardless of their station in life.
I wonder whether or not we've actually achieved that.
Do you wonder, or do you know?
I don't know that we have. I don't have definitive proof that we've actually achieved that.
If you had to say, have we achieved what John Adams was talking about in there?
I don't think that we
have. No, of course we haven't. This is a process.
Yeah.
This is where the gospel revolution comes in. Anytime that the people think that somebody has a... See, Michael called this so brilliantly the spiritual revolution. Or the spiritual rights movement, rather. The spiritual rights movement. See, we had the women's rights movement. We had the civil rights movement. We have the gay rights movement. But we need a spiritual rights movement so that regardless of what somebody believes spiritually, regardless of what they do, what they say, what they think, what their faith is, or the lack thereof, we need a movement that proclaims that all people are equal in the sight of the Almighty. That has not been realized yet, Chris.
I agree with you. I don't think that it has been.
But that's what we're about. That's why I'm so freaking frustrated, Chris Harrington!
I hear you.
Yeah, I get you. Because united we stand, divided we fall. And I don't. The reason that the American Revolution was successful was because there was unity for at least just a period of time. The reason that the United States and the Allies were successful against Germany and Japan and Italy during World War II is because there was unity just for a period of time. And we haven't seen the victory yet. We haven't seen the manifestation of this oneness yet. And that's,
well, I think the analysis, though, in using this analogy is, you know, looking at, say, for example, federal government, you know, if you see the federal government as being the broadcast with Mike, and then I think that it's going to break down. Whereas if you see the broadcast as maybe Florida in cahoots with, say, Georgia to produce something on the coast, then I think you have a better analysis.
Or analogy?
Yeah. Well, I think your analysis is going to turn out for you because the way that you're looking at it is that there's a you have co-presidents or something like that. The analogy that you're talking about isn't going to lead to an analysis that's going to take you where you want it to go.
All right.
This is a states' rights issue versus a federal government issue.
Exactly. Or we could say it versus a dictatorial. This situation with the gospel revolution was dictated. And Mike even said it. He said it's his responsibility. He's going to do it. He might have been able to handle it better, but it would have been the same result. Would have been the end. I don't agree, but I do agree in his analysis of our oneness and our purity and the analysis of the good news of the gospel. Now, I wanted to make this strong point. We're getting towards the end of our time, but I wanted to make this strong point that America was not based on Christianity, and they were very careful. They were very careful not to base this country and the founding documents of this country on any particular religion. In fact, here's a clip from John Adams. Here you got to picture this. John Adams recruits Thomas Jefferson, again, very close collaborators during the time of the Revolution. Eventually, they become political enemies. They come back together at the end of their lives. But Adams recruits Jefferson to write the Declaration of Independence. Now here's the scene, you guys. You got John Adams and Benjamin Franklin reading the Declaration of Independence that Thomas Jefferson has written by himself. And now here comes the edit. And believe me, editing is not the easiest thing to do, as I've done a lot of it. But it's the dialogue is a little soft, but it's really well done. And Thomas Jefferson is being challenged by Benjamin Franklin about Thomas Jefferson's use of the term sacred and undeniable as to the rights that they are proclaiming in the Declaration of Independence. That's these rights we hold to be self-evident. Excuse me, these truths we hold to be self-evident. That's not what was originally written. What Jefferson originally wrote was these truths are sacred and undeniable. And you'll hear Jefferson's response to Benjamin Franklin's criticism as we continue right here on The Good News on Glenn Klein Online.
We hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable, that all men are created equal, etc. Sacred and undeniable. Smacks of the pulpit.
Smacks of the pulpit.
Does it? These truths are self-evident, are they not? Perhaps. Self-evident, then. Self-evident?
Self-evident.
Do not mistake me, sir. I share your sentiment.
Every single word was precisely chosen. I assure you of that, Dr. Franklin.
Yes, but yours will not be the only hand in this document. It cannot be. They will try to mangle it, and they may succeed.
There may be expressions which I would not have inserted if I had drawn it up, but I will defend every word of it.
Well, it's what I believe.
Thomas Jefferson say, well, it's what I believe. I mean, it's just, can you imagine that moment, Chris?
Yeah.
These guys are editing, and see, Benjamin Franklin, the consummate politician, he salves Thomas Jefferson's emotional wounds by saying, listen, I agree with this, but we've got to take the bigger picture into consideration, which is,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
This saying it's sacred and undeniable smacks of the pulpit. And these guys were very concerned about leaving religion and the pulpit out of the governance of these states united.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we have religious freedom in the United States and then how we actually approach that concept in practice.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we have how many thousands of 30 or 40,000 versions of Christianity, and some of them can't stand each other. So there's an interesting thing in that they want freedom to practice it as they practice it, but for other people that they should not practice it that way because they're wrong or because they're going to hell or because they're not in God's will or whatever. And so it's a constant struggle that we have with our own definition and accepting what it is that we say that we believe in.
But how genius was this document and the concept? We're here in this country, who knows how many thousands of denominations are represented, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, every
sure.
religion, and heinous situations like the Westboro Baptist Church, people having freedom to speak these horrible things in the name of God, and people having the freedom to say we don't believe in God and come against things like the Roman Catholic Church and or the Westboro Baptist Church or whatever. The genius of these guys and the wisdom that I believe was imputed in their hearts through the Almighty came out at that moment, and we keep coming back to it. And these guys, they were special because of the moment that they lived in. But what was resident in their hearts, I believe, Chris, is resident in every single human being's heart around the planet.
I can go there.
Good.
I can go there, and even further. You know, I think the problem is language in and of itself is prejudicial, and then we've got layers of society and culture and family and history and purported history and imagined history And you start stacking all that stuff up. And most people, for example, when you talk about what people think politically or economically, they don't have the awareness of having had field information. They have something that they've been told or that they misapprehended from some source, and they're running with that like it's true.
What do you mean by that?
Let's say you hear on the news something, and so you repeat that, but you might not repeat it absolutely accurately, even if it were told absolutely accurately
right.
to begin with. And then by the time it's reiterated, you know, you ever see a paint your wagon? And they talk about the six girls that are coming up the mountain to be with the miners. And then by the time that they get finished telling the story and the news reaches the mining town, there are 50 women or whatever it is.
It's like the game of telephone.
Yeah, everything gets magnified, elaborated, and, you know, it was a 100-pound fish instead of a perch, whatever. People do that a lot. But people will run with it. If you go on the morning news sites and you look on the blogs, you will see what people will be repeating all day long, sometimes iterated as much as 50 pages. The first 50 pages of Google will be the exact same thing over and over and over again of some phrase that's on every radio program,
right.
every news broadcast program, every newspaper. And people don't have an opportunity to get that information for themselves. It's boom, stamped on their forehead, and they run with that. And that's how they think.
No doubt.
Yeah.
One of the cool things about this period of time that we're talking about here on July 4th, the 236th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence of the USA, or as well as the gospel, which we have the thousands of years of documented evidence in the scriptures. We're going to talk about the scriptures, as I said. It's a huge issue. It's a very, very important, in my opinion. But we have a historical record. We can go back to the original words, you guys. Now, this is the speech, as we get ready to close here on this edition of The Good News on Glenn Klein Online. This is the speech that John Adams gave right before the Continental Congress took a vote to whether the 13 colonies would proclaim their independence from the United Kingdom, from Great Britain.
Sure.
Get ready to be inspired, you guys.
Mr. Adams of Massachusetts.
Mr. Adams of Massachusetts.
Objects of the most stupendous magnitude. Measures which will affect the lives of millions, born and unborn, are now before us. We must expect a great expense of blood to obtain them. But we must always remember that a free constitution of civil government cannot be purchased at too dear a rate, as there is nothing on this side of Jerusalem of greater importance to mankind. My worthy colleague from Pennsylvania has spoken with great ingenuity and eloquence. He has given you a grim prognostication of our national future. But where he foresees apocalypse, I see hope. I see a new nation ready to take its place in the world. Not an empire, but a republic. And a republic of laws, not men. Gentlemen, we are in the very midst of revolution. The most complete, unexpected, and remarkable of any in the history of the world. How few of the human race have ever had an opportunity of choosing a system of government for themselves and their children. I am not without apprehensions, gentlemen.
the end we have in sight is more than worth all the means. I believe, sirs, that the hour has come. My judgment approves this measure, and my whole heart is in it. All that I have, all that I am, and all that I hope in this life, I am now ready to stake upon it. While I live, let me have a country. A free country.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We've been talking with Chris Harrington. Hey, Chris, thank you
so much.
I got to ask you, these guys that were in the forefront of the American Revolution, do you think that they would be surprised that African Americans and Hispanic Americans and women and homosexual Americans have the same rights that white male Americans have now in this country?
No, I think they could have projected that. Maybe they couldn't have seen it for themselves, but... You know, I remember when we were kids, we were all thinking, gosh, one of these days we're going to have a car like George Jetson, you know? And I think it's the same kind of thing that they projected into the future, that sometime with humanity moving as slowly as a glacier, of course the glaciers are moving a lot faster lately, but point is that I think that they could see it into the future. They couldn't see it for themselves, but maybe for their great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
And that's what's happened, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Freedom is on the move. We're glad to be a part of it. Chris, I'm so glad that you're a part of it. Thank you so much, bro.
Thank you.
We're going to have to do this again very soon.
Awesome.
It's Chris Harrington's Reality. You guys, if you want to contact Chris, just Chris Harrington on Facebook, right, bro?
That's right.
And you can get in touch with Chris and see everything that he does and utilize this gift in beautiful Nacogdoches, Texas. Brother, I love you so much.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for being a part of my on-air therapy.
All right.
There he goes. Happy July 4th, brother. There's Chris Harrington. You guys, thank you for spending part of your July 4th or whenever you listen to this on the archive. Want to thank Chris for taking his time. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. Also want to thank the producer, engineer, and call screener. We'll get back to calls next week. The very handsome and independent and freedom-loving Sean O'Halloran for doing everything that he does. Want to wish you a happy July 4th. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!